Hello and welcome to our fostering podcast. My name is Angela Hunt. I am one of the co-founders of To the Moon and Back Foster Care. Today I'm delighted to be able to welcome Sarah Lloyd and Vicky Holland from the BUS team. The BUS team are a fantastic organisation that we are working with to develop one of our therapeutic tools which we're currently rolling out across our organisation. And today I'm hoping that in discussion, Sarah and Vicky will be able to enable our listeners to hear a little bit more about why BUS and its kind of model of working is making such a big difference to the lives of so many children who have experienced developmental trauma. Welcome so much. I'm delighted you can join us, Sarah and Vicky.
Thank you so much for inviting us to come and join with you this morning. And it's great to be able to think with you about BUS and to have the chance. We are loving working with your organisation. And it's lovely to find that fit of people who are valuing the relationship and the supporting the very challenging work of being a foster carer and giving lots of support around it. So it's great to talk with you about BUS, and we're delighted that you're going to be doing lots of BUS over the next year. We thought it might just be helpful to talk a little bit about how BUS came into being. BUS stands for Building Underdeveloped Sensory Motor Systems, and sensory motor systems doesn't exactly run off your tongue, never mind understanding what it means. And so what I'm really hoping we can do this morning is to really dive into what those foundation sensory motor systems are and why having a bit of an understanding about them can be helpful when we're thinking about the enormous complexity that children who had a very disrupted start to life can be. So maybe it would be helpful to start by just thinking a little bit about how BUS came into being. I've worked for a very long time in child and adolescent mental health. My first training was as an occupational therapist. And then I did lots of trainings in psychological therapies to try and be as useful as I could be to families that I was working with. And working up in Scotland, I was in a project where we were setting up a service for children who were in foster care. We were in a part of the Scotland that didn't really have any statutory therapeutic support services. And so there was me and a child psychologist and a child psychotherapist and some social work colleagues. And we were trying to think, okay, what could we do? We've got this blank canvas. What's going to be most useful? And I think we probably, to begin with, set up a fairly traditional service where we were wanting to support foster carers, really understanding the impact on them personally of being with children who experience such distress and dysregulation, also helping them to understand that there's more to behavior than behavior, and really being able to make sense of what might be underlying and how attending to the underlying stuff had really quite good results when you were trying to think about the difference between that and maybe more traditional ways of managing.
Sarah, how long ago was that?
Oh, 2005. We were up in Fife.
Wow.
Yes, so probably about 2007. It was the Springfield project, and it was a great blank canvas, a great chance to just think, how do we want to do it?
Yeah, I bet. And I think one of the things when we were first looking at starting the fostering agency, you know, Alison and I had already worked together for quite a while on and off, and it was that bit of knowing that we could do things differently. And I know we came at it from a trauma-informed approach.
Yes.
And very much about being aware of behavior being a communication, for example, and how you break that down and trying to understand the impact of developmental trauma on our children that were coming into the care system. And then as we've progressed over the last, you know, 5 years, the trauma-informed principles, values, philosophies are very entrenched in our culture, I think. And don't get me wrong, when you're working relationally, relationships can be messy. So you're constantly having to check that, aren't you, and ensure that there's positivity in the relationship, even when sometimes it does feel hard and challenging. And I know I was listening to one of your videos that you've got on your website, where you'd said, you know, the sort of three, if you had to describe it in three key words, what you what you're currently doing, that you'd say movement, relationship, and playful. And I, you know, I remember thinking when I first saw that, absolutely, that's what we should be doing in fostering services, trying to make those links. But when you're talking about relational work, how does that work for you? Because I know we're thinking about empowerment of foster parents, really giving them the toolkit to do what's going to be best for the children. How have you developed that, and how do you see that being further developed with BUS?
I think looking at it from the point of view of the child and understanding what a kind of a baby brain needs to develop. And I think we're really good now. It certainly, gosh, I trained 35 years ago, and the understanding of developmental trauma was nowhere near as advanced as it is now. And I think we're really good at understanding the relational part impact of trauma and the psychological impact of trauma and how it impacts children's learning and all of those things. But I think we've been slower to understand the impact of disruption at the very beginning of life on a child's the way they grow into them, to their body. That I think we're used to seeing typically developing children just kind of progress from one stage of development to the next, and we don't really give too much thought to how does that happen. But actually, with that, you know, amazing potential of the human baby and the brain, that there's that precariousness, isn't there, that it's so dependent on having attuned, predictable adult relationships. And I think that all of the children that we see are children where there's been disruption generally at the very beginning of life. So thinking about development happening from conception onwards, and that actually what those little brain and central nervous systems need to develop is to have a nurturing relationship that allows them to move. That babies are kind of have these innate patterns of movement, so that they're babies all over the world, completely regardless of culture or belief, that bodies just need to go through specific patterns of movement at certain stages of development to allow them to grow into their bodies, to have a sense of agency, to be able to do things like pick up a glass of water and get to their mouth, for them to be able to walk through a room without tripping and bumping and crashing, for them to know how much pressure or force to use in a hug, and for a hug to feel like something that's nice for their body, that they can relax into it rather than it feeling intrusive or unpleasant. So I think that bit of understanding how all of that bodily regulation comes into play, we've been much slower to make sense of. And that was really what I wanted to do with BUS, was to give us a bridge, a way of joining up those two different worlds, the world of bodily regulation, but with relationships. You know, those amazing people like Bruce Perry and the neurosequential model of therapeutics and things, who talk about regulate, relate, reason. What I just really wanted to pay a little bit more attention to was that bottom layer of the pyramid, the regulation one, because I think often when we're talking about regulation, we're talking about emotional regulation. And actually, for me, that comes on the foundation of good bodily regulation. And you don't get good bodily regulation unless there's a nurturing relationship there. So one of the things that's so exciting, I think, for us when we're thinking about BUS is the potential for change in a brain, no matter how old it is, because what we're talking about are children who've missed out on stages of development. Rather than children where there's been specific injury to their developing brain, typically. So there's a great expression of the brain being live wired that David Eagleman talks about, and I love that way of thinking about it. That there's all this endless potential just waiting for the right environment and the right circumstances for it to come into being. And that, I guess what BUS really tries to do is to work, to sit, to think with foster carers, with, you know, whoever it is whose child's had disruption to the early stage of the development, and begin to notice how the child's moving, how they're responding to their environment, whether they're really over-responding to a kind of a slightest brush past them or a hand dryer in the toilets, or notice, you know, is their body working well from a movement and a processing and making sense of information, and then working together with that foster carer or, you know, whoever the grown-ups are, to really think of ways that will be right for that child and for that carer in their space to go back and fill in those gaps, because the potential to fill in the gaps is always there. And that's so exciting to see.
Well, it is exciting. It's and it's fascinating. I mean, I did a lot with paediatric work as a nurse. And I know when I first heard about what BUS did, and I, you know, I came to the introduction and session that you did as the webinar, and I literally, I thought, oh, of course, why have, you know, all the years that I've been involved in looking after children, did I not know this? And how much better would I have been as a nurse to have noticed some of these things and didn't at that time? And that I came out thinking, I can't believe that, you know, this has been there all this time and we didn't appreciate it. And I guess this is where, you know, Carol, who, one of our foster carers, who we did a podcast with her recently, and with Alison, the co-founder of Moon and Back, talking about how they've applied the BUS model with one of the young people that we're looking after. And they were doing the videoing to actually coming down the stairs and going up the stairs. And, you know, Carol shared, you know, there was times when I was terrified to watch coming down the stairs, thinking, you know, what's happening? But she said to actually put that, you know, what she's saying was putting that into perspective of understanding it and then seeing it and thinking, that's not right, is it? It's just not right. So we do need to do something about that. And then doing the work and then seeing a video again and going, oh Lord, it's really working. You know, that for her, she said, I just could not imagine how successful it was going to be. And then we had another foster carer who said the other day, because she's actually attended one another introduction, she starts some work with her young person soon, and she said all the way through, all she could think was, they're talking about my young person here, this is my young person. So it was almost, I just didn't have to say anything, because everything was, oh, this is exactly how I'm finding my own person presenting, and I can make a difference here. And I guess the time factor, you know, for us, I think in choosing BUS as one of our therapeutic models, the time factor, because most kind of therapies, and we know it works alongside other therapies, for example, I'm not disputing that, but I think for most foster carers, when you're actually working with a lot of different therapeutic models, where potentially you're not really involved in the work, you're almost a cheerleader on the side, aren't you? You know, enabling another professional to work with the child. You don't always see the results, because by the time they're in adulthood, you might not be looking after them anymore. But I think what we're noticing with BUS is just the fact that in a matter of weeks, you know, and it is weeks where we're seeing something change, how, you know, how you can spend 12 weeks doing this work, but you'll see something before the end of that 12 weeks. And that's what we're seeing. I just wondered if that's, you know, from the stories you're hearing, is that something that you're finding is happening all the time? Are there reasons that it won't happen like that? Trying to understand how it could work.
Yeah, I think, oh, there's so many things, Angela, in what you're saying that would be, I'd love to pick up on. I think BUS is a different kind of therapy, because it's not a therapy that children come to and some magic happens in the therapeutic space and then they go out again. That what we're really trying to do is to use that blueprint of normal development, of typical development, and just think, okay, we're just doing it out of time, but we want to do it as it was intended to be, as our brain and central nervous systems, what they need to develop. And so carers are completely key in that. I often use the analogy that if we think of that stage when babies are learning to crawl, if you were to say to that baby, well, you can only learn to crawl when you come to therapy, and that's once a week, we'd have 19-year-olds still lumbering around on the floor. But what that baby will do will be, you know, loads and loads of times a day, they'll be crawling away, and they won't be thinking, oh, I'm practicing my crawling. Oh, I'm getting the right and left side of my body working together really well. I'm building my head strength. And oh, how my visual field is developing at the same time. You know, crawling is just a great way of getting from A to B and getting there more quickly than you've been able to up until till now. So what we're wanting to do is to try and support carers to really, we talk about carers being the main agents of change. And that doesn't mean that we need, as a carer, that you need to feel like you know everything there is to know about trauma. But you know that child who's living with you better than anybody. You'll know if you were to say, what do you fancy for breakfast? Or you went out shopping and you said, you can choose a toy. Which clothes do you want to wear? You'll know what works for them. You'll know before anybody else in the room, in an environment where you're thinking, actually, this is going to be a struggle for them, or feeling like they're living their best life. And that's the bit of being the expert in the child that we need for carers to be able to work with us, to think about how we can build these systems for their child. And you're right, change happens quickly because there's nothing broken about these systems. They just haven't had the experiences that they need to develop. And also, I think I was talking to somebody this morning and I was saying, what you can never do with bus is you can never predict at the beginning either the rate of progress a child's going to make or how far they're going to get in that kind of, we do a 16-week block of work. And for me, that's what keeps it interesting and keeps it fun, that it's not all formulaic and do this, this and this and everybody do the same and it looks the same. It's absolutely about thinking with individual children and families and partly thinking about what do you want to be able to do that you can't do. The shift for children and getting that sense of agency in their body and movement becoming fun and something that they can do rather than that frustration of their brain knowing what they want their hand to do but not being able to do it is phenomenal. But you have to know what's important. So, you know, if you're 19, maybe it's about being able to go clubbing and walk in a dark place with loud music without tripping and bumping and knocking people's drinks over. You know, if you're 5, maybe you want to be like the other kids who can sit on a chair and write at the same time. So really trying to work out what's right for each child, because foundation sensory motor systems need a bit of care and attention. They don't just naturally progress and grow as we see so much. But the potential for their growth doesn't shift, doesn't change at any point throughout our lives. Actually, we can keep going, and helping and empowering and working with carers to do the work has such a lovely impact on the relational stuff. We work with the universities around us to try and build an evidence base to try and be looking at evaluation, and we're desperately trying to publish the things that we've already got. But a couple of the things that we've had clinical psychologists in training talking to foster carers and social workers about how does bus impact on your sense of yourself as a carer. We do lots of measuring of changes in children, but it's also really important for us to be thinking about how does it feel as a foster carer. And there was a lovely social worker, Harriet Haslam, who did some research as part of her innovations in social work master's degree. And she pulled out 5 main themes from the foster carer she was talking to. The first theme was how having a better understanding of the bodily impact on a child's early experiences was, like you say, like a light bulb moment, really thinking, Why didn't I know this? But why didn't I think of that before? Of course, once you start to know the experiences a child needs to have to get their body working well, you think, well, how silly, why didn't I think of that before? But we get so caught up in our brains, don't we, and how, you know, the mind. She also, foster care has talked about how having that understanding really helped them to view behaviour in a different way. So things like, I don't know, children who wouldn't sit at the table to eat and were up and down, like had ants in their pants and were up and down and not holding food in their mouth and maybe walking with their head down as if they weren't interested in things. Suddenly having an understanding of core strength and stability, gravitational security, the idea of a body map, the idea of making sense of information from outside the body, how suddenly they saw their child's behaviour in a completely different way. And that knowing that allowed them to do things quite differently. So, for example, maybe that child was wriggly and squirmy at the table because they weren't getting the strength and stability they needed from their core to be able to sit. And first you need to be able to sit before you can use your hands to do anything like take food to your mouth or use cutlery. And then the other bits that were lovely bits to hear, the foster care talk about how they felt their relationships with the kids grew and just really blossomed as they were doing all of these games and activities with their children. And I think because we work so hard with each individual child and family to make sure we get the level of challenge right so that it's successful, both for the carer and for the child, that has a huge impact on those times they're playing together being fun. And then
parents, sorry, Sarah, does that help attachment as well then in respect?
Oh, completely. Yeah. And yeah, if being able to read your child, the more cues you've got to reading a child's emotional, bodily state, what state of mind they're in, how their body's working, all of that helps so much in being able to be attuned, doesn't it? So that you're not setting the level of challenge too hard or too easy. Yeah. Because playing a game together and it going well is so much fun. Playing a game together where the child just can't quite get it and it's just a bit too hard, it's just really frustrating. And if your experience has been that, well, you fail at most things and here's another thing I'm failing at, it doesn't just become, oh, this, I'm not very good at this game. It becomes like, I'm rubbish, I'm hopeless, I'm useless, like I can't do anything. But supporting carers to get that level of attunement right with all of this additional information, they talked about how much more confident they felt, how their self-esteem really went up, and how the value they felt as the important person in the child's life. And I know your organisation is fantastic at doing that, but that's not the experience of all foster carers everywhere who don't feel that their voice matters when decisions are being made about the child. So to have an intervention where it wasn't about, oh, you'll go and see an expert and they'll do something, it was about you're the expert, was phenomenal, really, for them, and how much they loved it and enjoyed it. And all of that, you know, if you're having fun and feeling good about yourself as the grown-up, all of that transfers too, doesn't it, to the how home feels and what it's like. And I guess another key thing for us in skilling up foster carers to be able to do this is they rarely only have one child through their life as a foster carer. But once they've got that expertise, then they can begin to notice and begin to think about other children who are coming into their care.
Yeah, absolutely.
I might have gone off your question a little bit there, Angela. There were so many things about what you were saying that I thought,
I can see this podcast lasting at least a good few 4 or 5 hours, you know, the way we're going. It's just so, I think the thing is we're opening a discussion that is, it's about an individual child, isn't it? So it's, I think in having foster carers who are, you know, the carers that we work with every day, they are so passionate about making a difference. That's why they came into it. You know, people come into fostering because they want to make the difference. And this is, we often see, I think, sadly, a system where we don't get enough services for children and they have to advocate constantly, which is hard because there's not enough to go around and it's the loudest that actually gets it. And you know, sadly for them, they become quite bolshy about it because they're so desperate to get what's needed. I think this in itself just brings a level of hope that, you know, where we can identify children that will benefit from this input, they get a sense of, crikey, I can really change something here. And I know from Carol's experience, the school was so happy because this young person was so disruptive at times in school. You know, he found sitting very, very difficult, and it was an open plan school, so up and down on, you know, light switches, and they found that great, you know, running around, and everybody's like, oh no, what are we going to do? And to go from that, where there was, you know, significant disruption, and the school were amazing, you know, they are an amazing team of educators, and they're really supportive of everything that we've asked of them. We couldn't have worked with a better group of people, if I'm honest. But what they found with the outcomes blew their mind. I think in the space of time that the change happened, you know, to the point where nativity play came along and he had a speaking part.
Oh, that's just so different, isn't it, from where he started?
So, so different. So I think, you know, that kind of, for Carol, she's in a situation now where it could have been incredibly challenging for a lot longer for her, which puts the placements of children into some state of jeopardy sometimes, where, you know, when you're working to give a child stability and continuity, and yet we're trying to figure out so much, and actually sometimes in a very short space of time, because it can alter your life if you've got a child who is struggling with issues relating to trauma that they've experienced and are possibly being misdiagnosed, or their behaviours being misinterpreted, and then we can somehow make a bit of a difference, and that helps that child to remain in a home that can continue to care for them for much longer. And to me, I just don't understand why everybody wouldn't want to do this now. You know, it's a remarkable experience, but it's also a remarkable opportunity to really alter the trajectory of the child's life. This is why we can see, you know, so many. We want to do it for most of the children that we look after, and currently we're trying to make sure that we've got all the, you have to get a bit of funding in place as well to do some of this, because we can't fund everything, but at the same time trying to then say to commissioners of our service, this is why it's so important, this is why you'll benefit from it, this is why you should invest in it. That's what we're trying to do, Alison and I are trying to work really hard on ensuring that commissioners hear this, because they can be part of the difference. They don't even have to be physically doing it all. You know, we can get the carers to be doing that. They want to do it. And they're better at it than anybody else.
Completely, completely. Yeah. And I think that example you give is so good, because it's not as if that having a part in the school play wasn't available to that child before. It's that he didn't have the capacity to be able to make use of that experience. And by building his foundation sensory motor systems, he was then in a position to absorb the good experiences that were around him. And I know you will have so much experience of this as well, that I think what was one of the kind of real impetus to develop the model was seeing that we weren't getting it right enough by just doing psychological therapies, that we could have the most attuned therapeutic parenting of foster carers, and yet the child was still continuing to respond to situations as if they were in their original environment. And it felt like pouring sand into the sea, that you had this amazingly nurturing, kind, caring, tuned placement, but it wasn't hitting the mark. And by going back and understanding that actually the child's foundation sensory motor systems have to be developed to a certain level before actually they're really able to make use of those kinds of experiences is so helpful. And it's not about not doing all of the other stuff. It's not about not doing the therapeutic parenting or having an understanding of kind of the psychological impact of the relational stuff, but it's also knowing that the way the brain develops is in that sequential way, and that making sense of things from the foundation of bodily regulation rather than always looking at it from the top down just gives a different way of looking at it. And I completely share your vision. Our vision is absolutely for every child where there's been disruption to development, for someone in their system to be thinking, let's think about how that's impacted their bodily regulation and let's do something about it. Because there's so much you could sort out with that. And it doesn't mean that it will be a quick fix and an easy win for every child. You know, for some children, and I think especially children who are really impacted by drug and alcohol use in pregnancy, that progression is slower, that you'll absolutely see some capacity growing, but it might be a lot slower than another child who's having exactly the same experiences. So for some children, the end of that first intervention, it feels like the end of the beginning, rather than getting their little systems into the position where they can now make really good use of the experiences that they're in their environment. So I don't at all want to make out that it's some sort of magical panacea for all things, but I do think it's a useful piece of the jigsaw, and that if we can get that right and if we can get that in place first, then a lot of other things do fall into place.
Is there, I mean, in your opinion, is in your experience of what you're seeing, I mean, I know you'll have lots of stories and anecdotes and feedback about how things have gone with individual children and young people. Is there an ideal age, or is there, I mean, I know, I remember when I did the introduction with you and you talked about the young person who wanted to wear some platform shoes, I think it was, and wanted to go dancing. And I mean, that's obviously a much older person because looking to go to a nightclub, that kind of thing. I think, because I know I was approached recently by somebody who works with much more older children. So I think 15 upwards, basically. She said, I'm not sure it would actually add much value and to what we do, because they work with a different type of service. And then somebody else said, oh no, but I know that, you know, bus team have worked with older children and it's had a remarkable impact. And I suppose for the people who are listening to this, I wanted to be able to share probably some diversity around ages and what you're seeing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you always want to get involved as young as you can, because I want to save children and spare them the awfulness of living in a body that's not working for them and the challenges that that brings for being in school, for friendships, for relationships, you know, so really wanting to get involved as early as possible. But there's no, from a potential point of view, there's no barrier. And I think it's always sad. I always feel sad when we're working with kind of teens of that age, because generally they've been through heaps of services already, where they'll have maybe had some help around their anxiety. They'll have maybe had some managing their mood and their feelings kind of work, but nothing's quite hit the mark for them. And I would say it's not hit the mark for them, because it's a bit like pouring sand into the sea. If you've not got a foundation of bodily regulation, you really, thinking about how hard that is to live with is just a bit upside down. You know, I can think of a lovely 15-year-old I worked with who'd been through, oh my goodness, years and years of therapy, but was trapped in this body that just didn't work for her. She came down the stairs holding onto the banister with both hands, huddled over. She looked as if she could have been 90 with osteoporosis. You know, she was just so uncomfortable in her body, and the amount of energy she was needing to use to just make her way around places, to sit down, to hold herself together. She was depressed, but the answer to that wasn't first to treat the depression, but it was to think about, okay, let's think about that little body. No wonder you can't feel good when your feet are off the ground, you know, because you didn't have those early experiences that would have allowed you to grow into your body in that way. And going back with her and helping her understand what babies need to get their bodies working for them. And we were able to really think about what she wanted, how she wanted to be, what she wanted to do, and to go back with her and her mum and do the work. And very quickly, she moved from a child who was really depressed, failing really badly at school, not managing peer group relations, exhausted at the end of the day and not having any capacity to do anything, to a young person who I remember when I went for my last visit and we made a recording together of the work. And she was saying, "Oh, sorry, I can't stay for it. I'm meeting my friends in the park. We're going to go around some charity shops because I'm really into fashion now and what I'm looking like." And, you know, it just opened up her world for her. And it wasn't that world hadn't been there before. It was that all of the focus and the intervention was on managing how she was feeling about not being able to get into the world, rather than thinking about, actually, the barrier for getting into the world is that you've not managed to grow into your body yet, but we can go back and we can do that. So it's never too late. And, you know, I am an absolute fan of psychological therapies, but I don't want children to be having psychological therapies to manage the fact that they can't do the stuff they want to do, when actually we can go back and we can sort that out and we can help them grow into their bodies so that their bodies work with them, rather than them having to use all of their brain capacity to just sit and manage their bodies, which gets misinterpreted all of the time as them being aggressive or anxious, or because they're sitting in a clenched kind of way. But do you know what? If they were relaxed, they'd fall off their chair. So really learning to understand those signals on a bodily level, and thinking with kids, you know, they've lived in those bodies all of their lives, asking them, talking to them about, can you do what you want to be able to do? And I'm not talking, you know, I'm going to the Olympics, I'm going to win the 100 metres, but just stuff like, do you feel confident going to McDonald's with your friends, knowing you'll be able to carry your tray of food, sit down on your seat, drink with your straw, eat your burger, and it won't be all over your face or all over the table, or you'll fall off your chair, or, you know, those kind of normal bits that we want everybody to be able to do. Let's start down there before we get too fancy with other bits.
Yeah, it makes just total sense, doesn't it? I'm bowled over by the of course of it all. You know, this is so, I want to say common sense, but I know there's no such thing, but it's that element of, you know, it's got to be a foundation. And I guess, would you say that by doing it, I know you mentioned earlier about, you know, just it's worth trying. You can do no harm, can you? There's no harm in trying.
Yeah, there's no harm at all. I think for us, the main, you know, those three things you talked about earlier, movement, relationships and playfulness. Mm. We've talked a little bit about the movement and the relationship bit, but the playfulness is an important bit, because that's really about the carer having capacity. And it's very hard to be playful with a child if you're completely wrung out and if you're exhausted. And so really often what we're wanting to be thinking about is, how can we support the carer here to have the capacity to do it? It's far less for us, is this the right intervention for the child? And it's far more about, is this the right timing for the family? Because it has to be fun. You know, no self-respecting 15-year-old is going to do something that they can't understand why they're doing it and it's not fun to do. Yeah. But equally, we can't expect somebody who's completely on their knees to be thinking of fun ideas and you know, making it good for their child. So that's the kind of bit of the pie of bus, whatever we're going to call it, that sometimes takes a little bit of different thinking about, and where I guess why the people who are wanting to train to support families in bus are people who are already coming with that expertise in being able to support families who are working with children with really high levels of developmental trauma.
Yeah, I guess as well, when you've got the people who are going to be the support network for the foster carers, so thinking about the people who go further into the bus development and the assessors and the enabling team that will, you know, be the ones reviewing everything, supporting the foster carer. That's another relational aspect.
Completely.
Reflecting on everything and scrutinizing detail. I know Alison mentioned in a conversation just the other day about how important it is to recognize that actually it might not be the best way forward, and you have to listen and interpret that positively. Just carrying on doing the same thing and not getting the results is not going to be a good idea. So to have the capacity in yourself to be able to say, okay, I'm listening to alternative ways of doing things. Because in some ways you're thinking outside of your usual box, perhaps, which is why
absolutely
foster carers we're working with are going, oh my God, it's blown my mind, you know, because they're having to work outside of how they've always worked. We've all got
and not just foster carers.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the same for all of us. And I look back on families that I worked with, you know, 20 years ago, and think, I wish I thought then what I would do it so differently. And we were up in Scotland this week training a team of educational psychologists who were saying exactly the same. Oh my goodness, I'm thinking about that child I saw in the classroom and I wasn't even looking at how they're sitting. You know, I wasn't even thinking about bodily regulation. But once you start to notice it, and I know that Alison's the same, once you start to notice it, you can't stop. and just the same for our foster carers. You know, we run groups, and I know something that we've been talking about with you, for younger children. And when we started running those groups in Leeds all those years ago, it was a very different way of being. And I think it would be fair to say there was a lot of scepticism amongst our foster carers about, you want us to do what? And there's no chairs, and we're going to go back and do things that I've been teaching him to walk. Why are we going back to lying on our tummies and rolling over and crawling? But as soon as you support them to understand why, then they're just such a fantastic resource. And now for us in Leeds, most of our referrals for those early years groups come from our foster carers as a new child's placed with them, and they've got the expertise often rather than the social worker in being able to notice the things that the child's being challenged with that maybe nobody else is noticing, because they're living with them every day, and they're seeing, they're hearing, oh my goodness, they're coming down the stairs like a herd of elephants. They're 10. We'd expect it to be a little bit different by then. But then being able to make sense of it, and rather than just saying, okay, we're going to practice coming down the stairs a little bit more lightly, understanding, okay, that's a good sign that those little foundation systems haven't had the experiences they need to be able to grow. Let's go back, fill in those gaps, and then I'll be surprised when I see you appearing downstairs, rather than knowing where you are every step of the way.
I think there's that, it's that kind of maintenance of curiosity, you know, constantly being curious. I mean, we talk about that with the PACE model, don't we, as well?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
That openness and questioning, wonder why, I wonder if, what could we do? And doing that in a good relationship, think about foster carers again, doing that in a good relationship where there's an ability, you know, we can encourage trying different things because we have to try different things, and not being too devastated if it doesn't work, but thinking,
oh, absolutely,
it did work, and how can we work on that, and being more positive about it. I think that's certainly how we work. And
absolutely. And for a boss, if it's not working,
sorry.
No, I was just thinking, when we're thinking about bus, if it's not working, it's that we've got the level of challenge wrong, and we haven't understood enough. And help us understand more, and then we'll get the level of challenge right. So it's never that someone's not doing it right. It's that either we've not explained it well enough, or we've not got the level of challenge right, or we've not understood enough the kind of particulars of that individual circumstance. So so important to be thinking about our role in all of that.
It's been an amazing conversation. I think you've shared so much of what's valued, I guess, in this, and the fact that it's doable, it's reachable, that, you know, people who are, you know, everyday caring for children can be a part of doing this, to make a difference. This is what I think is key, certainly from our perspective, that we can do little bits every day, and little bits every day will create big movements further down the line. And that's just a sense of hope, and it's a sense of opportunity to really add to the difference that carers generally are making anyway. But I think anything more we can do, like you said, to rescue some of the children from their potential, you know, misery of not being able to feed their body or understand their body, it's got to be a good thing. And
absolutely,
thank you, Vicky, enough for joining us today. I think it's a remarkable insight, I think, into what Bus Model can do, and I'm sure our listeners will want to find out more, which brings me to, you know, we do have a opportunity to work with you on May the 23rd with the webinar, and if any listeners want to join us for that, then they can get in contact with Moon and Back Foster Care, and we'll be more than happy to talk about how you can join the webinar that's we're running in collaboration with the Bus team, being led by you. So you as the experts, obviously we won't be doing that, but it'd be great for anybody else who wants to join us. But thank you so much. Was there anything else that you wanted to leave us with, or what about your vision for the future, or anything that you're working on?
No, honestly, just really thank you for being interested, and thank you for thinking out of the box a bit, and not just kind of, as you say, doing the same thing over and over again and wondering why it's not having the results you want, but being open to embracing a different way of being and thinking. And for all of the great work that the people listening to this podcast are doing, you really are transforming the lives of children, and it's a privilege, really. I just feel really humbled to be able to bring something to that piece, but it's you who are doing the day in, day out work that is going to make the changes and make it all happen. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Sarah, and thanks again, Vicky, for both of you for joining us, and we look forward to lots more opportunities to chat.
Thank you so much.
To the Moon and Back Foster Care operates across Cambridgeshire, Peterborough, Norfolk, Hertfordshire and Essex. If you'd like to know more about fostering, then please get in touch via our website to themoonandbackfostercare.com. Alternatively, give us a call on 01223 800 420. Thank you.